case is number 05-2215, Samuel Asui against the Attorney General.
My name is William Amate, and I represent Mr. Samuel Asari, the petitioner in this case.
Counsel, did you represent the petitioner in the proceedings before the BIA?
Yes, Your Honor. I did.
So it was on your watch, in effect, that the petitioner missed the deadline for filing a review of his basic proceeding, am I correct?
Yes, I have been in this case since the inception of the case. What happened was the petitioner made a motion to the board to reconsider the board's order of January 25th. And whilst that motion was pending, we had to wait for the decision of the board on the reconsideration before we came up to the Court of Appeals. So that's what happened. And the board made its final decision on March 31st, 2003, within 30 days of the final order, we filed this notice of appeal.
So in your view, we can look at not only the motion for reconsideration, but the underlying action of the board?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is a petition to review the Board of Immigration Appeals decision overturning the decision of the immigration judge issued on February 19, 2003. The board initially affirmed the immigration judge, and later on the board overruled the immigration judge on January 25th. And the petitioner Asari made a motion to reconsider, and the board again denied the motion on March 31st. Your Honor, it is Asari's contention that the board was erroneous in its decision. Having regard to all the facts of the case and the arguments that were advanced at the board. So the board in this reasoning asserted that Mr. Asari could relocate to other parts of Ghana. And that was the only reason that the board gave for ruling that Mr. Asari did not sustain his burden. That's the only reason the court gave for ruling that Mr. Asari's the only reason the court gave to rule that Mr. Asari's fears was objectively unreasonable. Your Honor, the relocation issue was extensively analyzed by the immigration judge, and the judge found that Mr. Asari has sustained his burden of proving that he would not be safe anywhere in Ghana. Now, in the testimony that Mr. Asari gave at the immigration court, he gave two very good reasons why he would not be safe if he relocated to other parts of Ghana. He testified that, number one, he practices a kind of Christianity that is more evangelical, which means that he had to preach the word of God to people in the hope of converting them to Christianity. Secondly, the elders of the family who were bent on killing him or harming him knew what frightened because Mr. Asari knew the secrets of the family, and he feared that if he preached somewhere and the elders knew about it, the elders would certainly follow him and carry out their intentions. So, Your Honor, these are very good reasons why Mr. Asari cannot be safe in Ghana. And the immigration judge analyzed these reasons extensively and came to the conclusion that he has proved that he will be persecuted if he went to other parts of Ghana. Your Honor, we believe that if this case is reviewed by this court, this court will find that there is no legal or factual basis for the board to conclude that Mr. Asari's fear was objectively unreasonable. We respectfully submit that the particular circumstances of Mr. Asari's case will show that his fear was very reasonable. Regarding jurisdiction of this court, as I've already said, Mr. Asari believes that he had a right to appeal, to make a motion to the board for reconsideration of his case. This right that is conferred by law, and DHS used that same right. While the motion for reconsideration is pending, the motion for reconsideration, Your Honor, is part of the administrative process that has to be exhausted before he came up to the Court of Appeal. He carefully exhausted that motion before he came up here. And between the date that the board gave his final ruling, which was March 31st, 2005, and the time that the petition for review was filed, he was not out of time. Your Honor, we respectfully submit that the final decision of the board was not given on January 25th. It was given on March 31st. Your Honor, in conclusion, I respectfully advise this court to review his case and overturn the board's decision and reinstate the immigration judge's decision.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Ms. Dent.
May it please the Court, my name is Rhonda Dent and I represent the respondent, the Attorney General, in this matter. There are only three points that this Court needs to consider. The first and most important is that this Court only has jurisdiction over the March 31st BIA denial of petitioner's motion to reconsider. The second point is that petitioner has waived any meaningful review of the March 31st, 2005 decision by not discussing it in his opening brief or his reply brief. And third, the BIA's March 2005 decision was not an abuse of discretion. This court
can only the BIA find a change between its first decision and the second one.
A three-panel review of the case resulted in overturning of the one-panel decision. And
why it changed? What was the basis of the overturning of the earlier decision?
Upon reconsideration, the court felt that Mr. Asare, the petitioner, could relocate safely within Ghana.
Were there any evidence for that in the second time that they had in the first?
There is evidence in the record that supports their contention. More importantly, the BIA simply has the discretion to change its mind if it so chooses. In this case, it did choose to change its mind. It's not required to change its mind upon motion to reconsider, but it decided to in this case based upon a thorough second review of the
issue. It really doesn't tell us the basis of its reconsideration. It doesn't tell us what evidence in the record it relies upon.
While the BIA's decision is not extremely elaborate, it's not required to give a full, thorough explanation of its reasonings.
It can't pull it out of a hat.
One way the first time and a different way the second time. Don't you have to explain how you got from point A to point B?
I agree with you, but it's not required to explain why it changed its mind. It is enough that upon further review by
the BIA. What's the authority for that?
This court has said in Ahmad that the BIA has the discretion to change its mind.
They didn't have to explain why they changed it, though.
Well, this court has said that the court does not have to give a full thorough explanation behind it.
You can't frustrate our appeal or any of you by giving no explanation.
True.
What they've done really is disrespectful to this court.
If
they have given us no basis for their decision, then we have an obligation under the law to review their decision. What are we supposed to do?
If the petitioner had filed a petition for review of that decision, of the January 25th, 2005 decision, yes, this court would have had an opportunity to reevaluate the board's conclusion. However, by failing to file the motion to reconsider, he has deprived this court of jurisdiction to do so, so we are now confined to the March 31st, 2005 decision.
Well, that's the one we're talking about, though. They're saying they don't give any reasons for the March decision, isn't
that right? I believe they're saying they don't give any reason for the January decision.
No, for the March decision.
Of course, reconsideration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Upon thorough review, that petitioner did not provide any reason, did not point out any specific errors of law or fact to require it to, or to convince it to change his mind. It's petitioner's burden when filing a motion to reconsider to point out errors of fact, errors of law, or omissions.
Who filed a motion for reconsideration?
For the one underlying the March 31st, the petitioner filed that motion to reconsider. So on January 25th, the final order was issued, an order of removal for the petitioner. Petitioner then filed a motion to reconsider. He did not file a petition for review of the January decision. He filed a motion to reconsider. Upon reconsideration, the board, again, a three-member panel of the board, came to the conclusion that it was not convinced that petitioner had not provided it any reason, had not pointed out any errors that would persuade it to change its mind from its January 2005 decision.
Who got these affidavits? I guess they are from the petitioner's father and grandfather, that the effect that he wouldn't be killed if he returned to the original place.
Again, that goes to the underlying decision, not quite the...
Well, I'm just asking a question. Who got them?
The petitioner obtained them. I believe they were faxed from Ghana, and they were submitted.
And he got the evidence, which was then used against him, I guess. Is that correct?
To the credit of the people making the declarations, they were honest and either said they didn't know what would happen if petitioner was returned, or that it never happened before, or that because petitioner failed to perform any traditional ceremonies that would relieve him of the responsibility of becoming the next fetish priest, that he therefore felt the need to leave. So it is to the credit that the declarations were honest. And in effect, right, in the BIA's review, perhaps did not sustain his burden.
Were these affidavits available when the IJ was holding his hearing?
Yes, they were. They were part of
it. They were there right from the start.
They were there from the start.
And we had one decision going one way, and then we reconsidered it went the other way.
Correct.
And we really know what caused the change.
Only that the source convinced the court that it had, that petitioner could relocate within Ghana safely, and petitioner was unable to convince the BIA otherwise. Again, the only issue before us right now is the March 31st, 2005 denial of petitioner's motion to reconsider. Petitioner did not address the motion to reconsider, the March 31st decision, in either his opening brief or his reply brief. The petitioner's brief is strictly about the January 25th decision, the underlying decision, which is not before this court right now, because there's a jurisdictional bar to reviewing the January 25th decision, because he was not filed within, a petition review was not filed within 30 days. And as the Supreme Court has said, and this court has supported, there's no tolling of the timeline for filing a petition for review because a motion to reconsider is filed. It does not stop the clock. It is not required while it's an opportunity. It's a choice that petitioner can make. He's not required to file a motion to reconsider in order to exhaust his administrative remedies. Perhaps another course would have been to file both a petition for review of the underlying or final order of removal and file a petition for review of the March 31st decision before the board. That was not done, therefore we're limited to the March 31st decision. Petitioner's brief does not address the March 31st decision, and so in essence he has waived any arguments he may have had that decision was an abuse of discretion.
Isn't that going to be awfully hyper-technical? They'd be the same arguments, wouldn't they?
Well, they'd be reviewed under a different standard of review.
I understand. They'd be basically the same arguments.
Which is also the downfall, because they are the same arguments. But it would be two different reviewing boards. This court has the opportunity to look at the substantial evidence of the record and decide whether or not the board's conclusions in the January 25th decision were correct if he had filed a petition for
that. Aren't we entitled to know why the board changed its mind? Isn't it? I mean, are they just a rubber stamp for the government? The government comes in and says, reconsider this thing, oh yeah, we'll come out the other way.
Well,
they have to tell us what the process for doing that was?
The board needs to give this court some indication, some hook, some idea of where their decision was based. And in this case, they did so by declaring that petitioner had failed to sustain his burden of proving that there was an objective fear of a persecution in Ghana because he could relocate within the country. As the record shows, after the petitioner declined the position of priesthood, he actually stayed in Ghana in another village for an additional 2 months before leaving for the Ivory Coast and then to Europe. There's evidence in the record to support the BIA's decision when it issued its final order.
The issue of relocation was considered by the IJ to start with, was it not? That was in the hearing process?
Yes, sir, it was. And I'm out of town if you allow me to consider.
Oh, please answer the judge's question.
That the immigration judge had an opportunity to consider relocation. In his original oral decision, he actually stated that that part of the record was a little sparse. He did not say that in his written decision, but in his original summary decision, his oral decision, he said that that was a little sparse, but he gave the petitioner the benefit of the doubt. The BIA, upon its, at that point, second review of the entire record, came to a different conclusion. And while this court may not agree with that conclusion, there's nothing to indicate, and petitioner has not shown that that was an abuse of discretion, that it was wildly deviant from standard norms, or that it was based on some impermissible ground.
Well, he said he made that finding in his oral pronouncement, but not in his written. Is that just done by striking out that language in the transcript?
After he issued his oral decision, the service appealed. The BIA remanded the case back to the immigration judge for a full decision that was in accordance to guidelines of what an immigration decision should be. So he simply didn't have to rehash or repeat exactly what he said in his oral decision.
Has the petitioner filed a motion to reopen?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
Is he still eligible to do so?
I don't believe so. I believe he's out of time for doing that. He would have to have, of course, a reason for doing so.
Inadequacy of counsel.
He would have to show, of course, Lozada standards for doing that. I really cannot speak to that. But I can only say that because there is no tolling, because we are bound by the statute, we were limited to the March 31st decision, and any review of the January 2005 decision has been lost. I thank you for your attention this morning.
Thank you, counsel. We will have 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I just want to set a record straight on a few points. First of all, the immigration judge made his finding in the written decision, not his oral decision, and the record bears that out. Secondly, the March 31st decision was a motion for reconsideration of the January 25th decision. They are one and the same, and those motions cannot be separated. The March 31st decision cannot stand in isolation from the January 25th decision. So that the government's point that the March 31st decision is the only decision you have to consider, Your Honor, I don't think it's
what
correct.
Do you do with the Ahmad decision, which appears to take the opposite position, does it not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Our Ahmad decision appears to take the opposite position, that the time is not told during the pendency of a motion to reconsider.
It appears to say so, but Your Honor, the point is all administrative remedies have to be exhausted before we come up here to the Court of Appeals. And all that Mr. Sawyer did was to try to exhaust all his administrative remedies before coming up here. In doing so, we had a final decision on March 31st, and we filed this notice of appeal within 30 days of the board's final decision.
Chairman, you point out to me where within your blue brief, your opening brief, or your reply brief, you address the board's decision on the motion to reconsider. Council has indicated that, in her view, you did not address the board's March decision. Is there some place here where you do address them that perhaps she's missed?
Your Honor, I'm looking at page 2 of the petitioner's brief. The last but one line says that it is against the decision to reverse the grant of asylum. Your Honor, if you look at the one line, it says that the petitioner moved the BIA for reconsideration. On March 31st, 2005, the BIA let stand its decision of January 25th, 2005. It is against the decision to reverse the grant of asylum to petitioner that this petition for review is directed.
Well, it sounds like you're attacking the January order in your brief and what the board had to say in January, not what the board had to say in March.
That is correct. We are attacking the January order, which was the order that reversed the IJ. The March order is just an affirmance of the January order. And, Your Honor, we take the position that the March order cannot stand on its own. It's linked to the January 25th order. Your Honor, the other thing I want to point out with respect is that I have read the affidavit sent by the father and the uncle of the petitioner, and they did not appear to say that he would not be harmed. The affidavit indicated that he would be harmed, but because this has never happened in the family, they know that there are great consequences to rejection of the office of priesthood of the fetish. It's never happened because everybody accepted that this is the only person who refused to accept that because of his brand of Christianity. So that is why they claim that they don't know exactly what will happen to him, but they know something would happen to him. That will be all, Your Honor. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Counsel. Now, thanks to both counsel, the case will be taken under advisement.